Working Cows Podcast, Episode 61, Bonus Episode.
Welcome to the podcast that gives producers a platform to discuss and share paradigm-challenging practices. Practices that have increased the effectiveness of their operation and the joy that their families have received from this lifestyle.
Hey everybody, it's Clay Connery, host of the Working Cows Podcast, here with another bonus episode for you guys, recording an episode with the videographer and photographer for the South Dakota Grassland Coalition's Our Amazing Grasslands videos. There will be a number of them linked in the show notes page for today. Had an opportunity to sit down with Joe Dickey. He's a guy that has been involved with these South Dakota Grassland Coalition videos since 2013 and been recording them and telling the story of these ranchers, and so I wanted to get his perspective on how this has affected him and what the impact to his life has been and how he has grown as a person as a result of being involved in this project. So, Joe, thanks for joining me today on the Working Cows Podcast.
Hey, Clay, thanks for having me, man. Happy World Soil Day.
All right. Couldn't be a better time to sit down and chat about what you guys have been doing in your partnership with the South Dakota Grassland Coalition. How did that partnership happen? What was the initiation of that work together with them?
Well, we got to go all the way back to 2008. I used to be a wedding photographer. That's kind of how I got into shooting this editorial style storytelling. And I did a wedding for Lyle and Garnett Perman's daughter, Kaija, on the Rock Hills Ranch in Lowry, South Dakota. They ended up winning the Leopold Conservation Award in 2013, and Lyle talked to Colette Kessler from the NRCS, who was kind of heading up the, you know, getting a team together to do a video for their Leopold Award, and they said, you got to check this guy out. I had been doing farm work for General Mills. My first farm story was Cascadian Farms north of Seattle. I did a story for them. For General Mills there, and then I was doing some work for Muir Glen in California, another General Mills company. Did some Burnett Dairy and Lakelands Organic Co-op was some local farm stories that I'd been working on. And so I wasn't new to farm stories, but I was definitely new to the grasslands when I met up with Lyle Garnett out in Lowry and started working on their piece.
Interesting. Connection there. I was just doing some research. I'm going to do an interview with Gabe Brown next week, and he's a producer from Bismarck, South Dakota.
Yes.
And he was talking about General Mills has a scoring system for their producers about basically what are you doing to take care of the soil health, and that if you've got different practices, your score ranks higher, and they are kind of promoting those practices within the General Mills family of brands, I guess. So that was kind of interesting to me.
Yeah, they're really doing a great job with the new more regenerative agriculture rather than just sustainability. I think a few years back when I was working with General Mills, sustainability was the big word, as it was with a lot of the general population, right? Was sustainability was what we needed. But I think we are finding, and General Mills is finding for sure, that it needs to be regenerative. We need to be rebuilding soil. So, yeah, they're doing a great job with things.
Yeah, it's exciting to see companies kind of taking that approach and seeing, not just what can we basically cook up in a lab to grow, but how can we work with nature in order to produce a more consistent product and a product that is sustainable, yes, but also rebuilding those soil, the soil life. So that's cool stuff. What was the difference between some of those products or some of those projects and then your projects with the South Dakota Grassland Coalition? You kind of mentioned that you weren't familiar with the grasslands. What was the change? What was different?
Well, I think the big thing was, you know, moving into the grasslands. I have to go all the way back to the 80s when I first started walking through the grasslands in South Dakota. I started pheasant hunting, and, you know, being from Minnesota, we had to kind of go across the border to really get into pheasants. And, you know, back then I looked at grasslands, and, you know, if I saw brome grass, that's what, to me, that was grasslands, right? So we're going through this brome grass, and once I started working on the grassland projects, I started to learn about all the diversity in the grasslands and started to understand that maybe brome grass wasn't really the best thing. You know, I think the big difference between the projects that I was working with General Mills and the grassland projects is, I guess it's a few things. One is the challenge that General Mills faces is they're working in such a large scale, and they're working with farmers more so than ranchers. So, you know, the ranch part of it was new to me, and understanding that there had to be different ways to manage the grasslands other than just letting the cattle out and letting them graze free. Also, rebuilding the grasslands, the land that had been turned over, and trying to bring back the native grasslands was, you know, it was all new to me. So I guess that's the big difference, right?
Sure. Was there a similarity in that you were telling the story of a family, or was there is that similar, or was that different as well, in that a lot of these grasslands videos and Leopold videos seem to feature families pretty heavily? Is that similar to what you were doing in other work that you were doing, or is that also different?
Definitely different with the South Dakota. You know, these are multi-generation farms and ranches that I'm working on in South Dakota, and General Mills farms tend to be larger scale, so we weren't focusing on individuals. Although Cascadian Farms, I was working on a story. Farmer Jimmy was the guy that ran the farm for a number of years. So the first story I did was, you know, he was retiring the next year. So it was really more focused on an individual, but it wasn't a family-owned farm. So I think what we're finding in South Dakota is, you know, these are multi-generation farmers. And so there's a lot more that plays into what they're doing than just, you know, caring for the land to, you know, get the biggest yield. It's really about caring for the land so that you can pass that on to your kids or whoever the next generation of farmers and ranchers are that are going to move into that property. So a little bit of a difference there. I think there's, you know, I'm finding a lot more emotion in the grassland stories I'm working on in South Dakota, which, you know, I think it's really important. I think it's important to understand the why, you know, why we do these things, why the farmers and ranchers do what they do, before the how and the what. So, they're wonderful stories to work on because we get to do a little bit of all of that, right? I'm kind of an emotional guy. I find that, you know, a really great way to get the audience to connect to the story is make it emotional, hook them in that way, and then you kind of sprinkle in the how and what of what they're doing, because if you get too technical, I think people sort of lose interest. So anyway.
No, it's a, you know, I think you're making these for a popular audience. You know, you're making these for the people who maybe aren't connected to farming and ranching. And so to dive off into the, no pun intended, to dive off into the weeds can get a little bit, you know, a little bit cumbersome for them. And when, and these videos that you're making are engaging and saying, you know, we're using these practices, whether that's cows or farming practices, we're using these practices to regenerate the soil. And when we regenerate the soil, that increases our profit. And when we increase our profit, that enables us to pass this on to another generation who actually wants to be a part of the operation, because, making money is more fun than not making money, I guess, and to say it a little bit crudely, but that's, you know, those are things that really, I think, are, everybody can come to it without any background knowledge and grab onto that and understand kind of what's being said, I guess.
Yeah, absolutely. You made a really good point about making money, and, you know, it's really refreshing to come into a story and start on a story and talk to the rancher and hear them say, you know, we really started this to try to make some more money. You know, they're really honest about it. And once they started, you know, doing the cross fencing and rotational grazing and all of the other great things, they started to see that it wasn't really just about the money. And, you know, they really were doing things that made a difference. You know, and obviously not all of them are saying, hey, we did this for the money, but you definitely hear that. And I think that's an important point for them to make and for us to make as storytellers, is to really show that, hey, you know, this is something that anyone can do, and you're not going to be losing money by doing it. You actually will end up making more money because, you know, the grassland's healthier, your cattle are healthier, you know, the wildlife are coming back, and so really a lot of great things happening. I think it was Tance Herman out of Sturgis, South Dakota, NRCS guy, that said during one of the interviews that these are also practices that, you know, not just farmers and ranchers can look at and try to work on. These are practices that you know, we in the city can think about, right? I mean, we have our little plots of land, and are we really doing the best thing for our land? You know, I look at my own yard, and I have a section of my yard that always seems to flood. And I guess we really don't think about that we have to treat the soil and the earth the same way that these big farmers and ranchers do. So yeah, there's a lot of things that don't just apply to, you know, a 25 or 30,000 acre ranch that we can learn from these guys and gals. I'm sorry.
Yeah, that was a point that he made in the Kamak Leopold video. And, you know, I really appreciate that. I myself live on a 10 acre ranchette. And that's kind of what he said, you know, and I have tried to be conscious of those things on my place. You know, what could I do? Well, I've got a horse right now. I had a milk cow, but I don't anymore. But you know, I have a horse right now. I've got some goats. I could bale graze them, you know, to try and return some nutrients to the soil and some of those things that we think about. You know, another one that sticks out to me is a perennial guest of the Working Cows podcast is Derek Schwanebeck, and he said, when in the first time I ever heard him speak at the High Plains Ranch Practicum, he said, you know, whenever I drive by a little patch of grass, even if it's in the drive-through at McDonald's, I'm looking at that patch of grass thinking, how could I get some chickens on there to graze to increase the soil health, you know? So it's the way that these guys think is pretty cool, and it really gets exciting. And you know, like you said, it becomes about more than just making money when you start to really get addicted to the idea of using your practices and your cows to improve the land and improve the soil. So it's really exciting to see these people share their story and hopefully get other people excited about these practices as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And addictive is a great word for it. I'm finding that it's becoming a bit of an obsession for me to learn more and more about not only what's going on above the soil, but also below the soil, and you know, understanding the microbial activity and all of the things that help the plants to be healthy, right? And all of the things that have been disturbed over the years, and now just, you know, having more of an understanding of why really God made things the way he did and why things worked so well before we came around and messed them up, right? So, yeah, I'm to the point where I'd actually like to go back to school and learn more of this. You know, I was a fine art major, and, you know, at one point I was trying to figure out how I was going to make money. I thought maybe I'd be selling Elvis paintings out of the back of a van. I went back to school and got a design degree and ended up being a senior art director, creative director for 10 years. And, you know, so that's kind of my background, but, you know, I really want to learn more about biology, and I am learning, but man, it's a long process.
Joel Salatin was my guest on episode 50 of the Working Cows podcast, and he said that prior to industrial farming, the American land mass produced more food than it does today. You know, and that we were these practices where we have isolated, basically we've siloed the sectors of agriculture, and we only produce corn on this chunk of ground and beans on that chunk of ground and cows on that chunk of ground. Whereas if we can make all those things, if we can integrate all those things back together, that they're all going to produce, they're all going to produce more if we can somehow integrate them again back together than they will if we could try to keep cows where they belong and corn and soybeans where they belong. If we can somehow bring it all together, those things are going to increase each other's productive capacity. Obviously not at the same time, but, you know, whether it's grazing corn stalks or something like that, or whatever those practices end up looking like in the practical sense. But it's interesting that we aren't producing more with these practices. In some cases, we're actually producing less. And so we want to try and figure out how we can start to regenerate these soils and some of those things. What has been the did you have something to say about that? Sorry.
Yeah, yeah. No, I was, I guess I was thinking about, you were talking about bale grazing on your ranch yet. And before I forget about it, I was thinking about a video, one of the grassland videos that I just finished editing is, the Carmichael Ranch. And, I've seen, the bale grazing before, but this, it was just a really good illustration, one of the sections that they were working on. You know, he said that, actually, this may have been Jody Brown. I'm getting them mixed up because I'm working on a few videos right now. But
he said
I have 12 that I'm editing right now from our run through South Dakota this year. And Jody Brown had said that, you know, like 20% of the hay that they put out when they're bale grazing is wasted. But he said waste is probably not a good word for it, because the cattle trample it, and, you know, they defecate and urinate on it. And you know, I have a drone shot from up above, and you see all the hoof prints in this section that was really like salt and just completely compacted, which is nearly impossible to grow anything on. It was just a really good illustration of, you know, what can be done to bring back these soils. And you're right. Like going back to, you know, having multiple types of crop and you know, bring the cattle in on it and doing the things that were done before we were here, you know, when the buffalo were roaming around and doing the same thing. It's exciting to see what these guys are doing. Guys and gals again. Yeah. I got to keep saying that. I'm going to say gals from now on.
That's fine.
Gals and guys.
You know, that is something that I think has been an eye-opening experience to me, is talking to people who say, you know, these aren't even, these practices aren't even as ancient as roaming buffalo herds. We were doing things differently 100 years ago. You know, people were using cows to clean up crops 100 years ago. It's just, you know, that we got industrialized and we got siloed where we only do certain things on certain patches of ground, and it's, you know, we just have gotten away from an integrated system, and for whatever reason. And so it's interesting that, you know, yes, we want to mimic the buffalo herds, and we want to use electric fencing to mimic a predator pushing that herd into a higher stock density. But we also want to remember that there were some people back in the day who were seeing these landscapes and how they were impacted by animals, and recognizing that it was important to keep animals out on those landscapes. So I wanted to ask you a question about what the impact of these projects has been on you personally. How has it affected you? How has it impacted you from the perspective of your thinking about the world as a whole, I guess, to go big picture?
Well, I'll tell you, first of all, this is all I want to do now. So, I've worked on a lot of projects, a lot of different photo and video projects over the years, a lot of big name clients and some pretty cool stuff. But now that I'm doing this, there's such a sense of purpose and to be able to make a difference. And the cool thing about it is, it's not just me. I have my buddy Mitch Kezar that travels with me in the pickup truck, and he's an old former national, not old. He's going to get mad at me for that, but I meant to say former. He's a former National Geographic photographer and worked for Time Life, did a lot of work with Successful Farmer over the years. I had only 200 and plus almost 300 covers for Successful Farmers in the 70s and 80s. He said the same thing. He said, this is really all I want to do now. It's funny. His phone, his call is coming through right now. So if you hear it beeping, that's him. So, we don't want to do anything but this, you know. We know that these stories are something that can really make a difference, to be able to spread the word about what these farmers and ranchers are doing. So it's had a huge impact on my work. I'm getting my son involved in this now. He's actually in his first year of college. He's down in St. Louis, and he's focusing on film studies, but he's been riding around with us in the truck over the past few summers. I think he was probably maybe 13 years old when he started working with me on farm stories, holding reflectors and, you know, flying a drone and doing a bit of work with me. And he's really into it now. And it was interesting watching it through, you know, his journey into farm and ranch videos through his eyes. He, you know, like any kid at first, he kind of wanted to get into like extreme sports filming and you know, kind of cool stuff like that. And he's been on these ranch shoots with us, and I'm watching him more and more now. He's so engaged. He's listening to what the farmers and ranchers and the NRCS folks are talking about, and the Grassland Coalition folks. You know, he's leaning in. I can see that he's really paying attention, and he's, you know, he's kind of got the fever, I guess is what you'd call it. He's all in. So, you know, we're all really, really excited about doing this work.
How do you see the importance of these projects? What is the broader culture? How do you see that relationship, and why does what you're doing matter?
Well, I think, that's kind of a heavy question, but I think obviously we need to take care of our planet, you know, and I think we need to take care of the water. We need to take care of the soil, the carbon and all of the things that, that the grassland and farms can help, right? I mean, so I think when we talk about the grasslands, the loss of the grasslands being equal to the loss of the rainforest, and everyone, you know, hears rainforest and they think, well, that's, you know, we're global warming and we're really messing up our planet because we're, you know, taking down the rainforest. Well, it's really the same thing with the grasslands. You know, they can help heal the things that have been damaged, And so I think this is super important, you know. And not only that, but just being able to grow things in a natural way instead of using all of the chemicals. I think, you know, my mom lost her battle to cancer at age 54. I think about all the things that we're putting into our body that aren't natural. And so going back to a more natural way of growing our food, to me, is that's like a mission, right? Is to get the story out there to help people understand how to do things in a way that I think is the right way. So I think that's what we as storytellers really should be our mission, you know, to tell these stories that help make change, right?
Very cool. How has what's the actual mechanics of the project? You know, I think I heard something about the amount of miles you put on for the 2018 Grassland Planner and some of those different things. What's been some of that, the back end of the project and the editing and the miles that you've driven to document these stories and the seasons that you've worked in and some of those things?
Yeah, it's been quite a learning. There's been quite a learning curve to try to figure out what works best and how to best approach these stories. A lot of the farm stories that I was working on, my commercial corporate stories, were outside of the Midwest, so I was getting on airplanes, and that's really a challenge, is trying to figure out how to pack up all your gear. And so I think at first when you start out, you end up with too much gear, and then you figure out what works and you try to keep it small and not trip over it. And, so for us, working in South Dakota is great. We're in the Twin Cities. It's, you know, we can get in a truck and, make our way out there without loading up into a plane. That said, we still have to be careful about how much we pack, because it's amazing how quickly you can fill up the back end of a pickup truck. And every time you reach for a different lens or a different tripod, you know, all the gear comes out of the back of the truck and you can't repack it. So we've really kind of got a system now, but it's taken a number of years to get that sorted out. So we try to set up stories so that we're doing three or four on one trip. Typically we spend a day at each ranch for each story, and that day will start in the dark. And it's amazing how the ranchers are always open for it. I guess they're probably used to getting up early, probably more so than us, but we start in the dark so we can get the sunrise and then we work late into the day. So, yeah, we're putting on a lot of miles. I mean, I would say it's 1,000 to 2,000 miles a week, you know, if we go out on a one-week trip, and that's three or four ranches. Obviously, we get West River, and that's, you know, you're looking at 700 miles just to get out to where we're going, and then you drive around to the next ranch. So, yeah, you can put on 2,000 miles in a hurry, so...
And the ranches get farther apart out here, West River, too. So
they definitely get farther apart. But, yeah, so then, you know, in an ideal world, I would come home and, you know, start working on the stories right away. And unfortunately, or fortunately, I guess from a business perspective, there's a lot of other work in between. So it gets to this time of the year, and... the good news is now I have work to carry me through the winter. I have a lot of editing to do. So we download all of the footage the day that we shoot it, and we get it onto a couple drives. Mitch takes one home with him, and I keep one here so that we have backup. And then, you know, once we get through that last ranch story, and usually it's typically in November, late November, then I start on the edits, and they start showing the first of the Grassland series in January. So I am already two stories in, and I have 10 to go, 10 to edit. And I also have been working on soil stories for the for South Dakota, so I have 8 of those to edit as well. So, and editing is, you know, it's a bit of a process. Typically, when we do interviews, we'll have 3 or 4 people that we do an interview with on these farms and ranches. And so I will lay those out into a timeline, and we might have 2 to 2.5 hours of interview footage. And I know that you've done editing, so you understand how daunting that can be then to pull out a story. When I started doing this really in 2013 with the Leopold Award at the Perman Ranch, it was a lot more of a challenge because I didn't have a good understanding of what they were doing. So I relied more on my Grassland Coalition and NRCS partners to really help me pull this story out. And now I've done this and I have a better understanding of what they're doing. So not only am I better at doing interviews because I understand what to ask them, but I'm also better at finding the stories in 2.5 hours worth of interview footage. The biggest challenge now is I'm seeing too many stories within the story. It's amazing all of the things that these ranchers and farmers are doing, and you can really pull 5 or 6 videos out of each farm and ranch visit. I mean, there's so many good things that they're doing. So it's really trying to find a good variety so that when you look at the end of the year and you're looking at 12 stories, you're seeing sort of 12 different good topics.
Good stuff. I think we could go on and on here, but I got just a couple of last questions. Has the relationship with the South Dakota Grassland Coalition opened up other similar work or other agricultural work for you, or have you had other opportunities to partner with other organizations, like even other than the South Dakota Soil Health Coalition?
I have, yeah. Actually, I just did my second Nebraska Leopold Conservation Award, and I have an estimate that I'm putting together right now on a rather large 4 to 5 month long soil story project with working with some of the bigger names in soil health. So it's definitely open doors. Mitch and I talk about this. I don't know that anyone is doing as much work as we are. I think it would be really hard to be able to do this many stories in a year. And so we have a tremendous opportunity to not only get out and get work, but also to get these amazing stories. I mean, our library of footage is it's unbelievable what we have right now. So I think that we'll probably continue to have more opportunities. It's just trying to find the right ones and find the balance at home, right? We've got families, so got to find that balance. But, yeah, it's pretty exciting.
Very cool. Well, I really appreciate your time today, and I thank you for your work. It's been really good stuff, very engaging videos. I am a rancher myself. I work with my dad on his ranch, and so I've even for me, they're appealing, and I really enjoy watching them and gathering what I can from them. Has there been opportunity to do work with these families outside of the South Dakota Grassland Coalition? Have any of them commissioned you to do like a ranch documentary or anything like that?
At this point, they haven't. I'm always trying to find a way to weasel my way into these ranches to do some hunting. But that's always a tough one to approach. But no, I haven't gone back and done any other work, personal work for them, but definitely would welcome the opportunities. It's funny, you kind of fall in love with all of them as you're doing these stories. They're all just great people.
Yep. I think that's going to be something that becomes an industry into itself, ranch documentaries and people getting kind of those legacy pieces put together to pass on to future generations with the, you know, as this equipment and the technology has gotten more affordable, I think you're going to see that crop up as an opportunity as well.
Yeah, I agree.
So, Joe, thank you for your time today. I really appreciate it. This is going to be episode 61 of the Working Cows podcast, so I don't know if I'll get every video that he's created for the South Dakota Grassland Coalition and the Leopold Award put in the show notes page, but I'll definitely point you in the direction to find them. So,
great talking with you.
Show notes page for today's episode is workingcows.net/61. Workingcows.net/61. We'll have a number of links up there for you to check out. So head on over there and check that out. Coming up next week on the show on Monday, we will be releasing an episode with Jason Mock of Constant Canopy. Now, this episode is going to start out talking a lot about row crop strategies and different things like that. And then we're going to get into closing the loop on the between livestock and grain crops. And if last week's episode wasn't a paradigm challenge, this week's episode is. I mean, it was just a really great conversation with Jason. I'm really looking forward to sharing it with you. And as far as last week's episode goes, really the paradigm challenge contained in that episode is that we in the beef industry don't need to be shooting each other when it comes to different sectors and different styles of production. We need to all be building each other up and advocating for each other. We're all rowing in the same direction. This isn't a zero-sum game. We're all serving different segments in the market, and we need to come together in order to promote each other as we each seek to make the best use of the resources that have been entrusted to us. And I'll talk a little bit more about that next week at the close of the episode on Monday. But that's just a brief summary of my thoughts on that episode. So I really appreciate Josh and Calvin sitting down with me. I really appreciate Joe sitting down with me today. And I look forward to sharing my episode with Jason Mock of Constant Canopy with you on the next episode, episode 62 of the Working Cows podcast.
We invite you to visit workingcows.net to subscribe to the show via iTunes or Stitcher. You'll also find detailed show notes pages, resources from our guests, and the industry leaders who have influenced them. For more ideas on putting your cows to work for you in a more profitable way, tune in next week.